So today we are reading from Canto 11, Chapter 17, Text 38. Griham vanam vapo vishet. Griham vanam vapo vishet. Pravraje dva dvijottamaha. Pravraje dva dvijottamaha. Ashramad ashramam gacchen. Ashramad ashramam gacchen. Nanyatha mat parascharet. Nanyatha mat parascharet. Griham vanam vapo vishet. Pravraje dva dvijottamaha. Ashramad ashramam gacchen. Nanyatha mat parascharet. Griham vanam vapo vishet. Pravraje dva dvijottamaha. Ashramad ashramam gacchen. Nanyatha mat parascharet. Griham, the family home. Vanam, the forest. Va, either. Upavishet, one should enter. Pravrajet, one should renounce. Va, or. Dvija uttamaha, a brahmana. Ashramat, from one authorized status of life. Ashramam, to another authorized status. Gachet, one should go. Na, not. Anyatha, otherwise. Amatparaha, one who is not surrendered to me. Charet, should act. Translation: a brahmachari desiring to fulfill his material desires should live at home with his family, and a householder who is eager to purify his consciousness should enter the forest, whereas a purified brahmana should accept the renounced order of life. One who is not thus surrendered to me should move progressively from one ashrama to another, never acting otherwise. Purport: those who are not surrendered devotees of the Lord must rigidly observe the regulations governing one's authorized social status. There are four divisions of life, namely brahmacharya, grahastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. One who wants to fulfill material desires should become an ordinary householder, grahastha, establish a comfortable residence, and maintain his family. One desiring to accelerate the process of purification may give up his home and business and live in a sacred place with his wife, as indicated here by the word vanam, or forest. There are many sacred forests in India meant for this purpose, such as Vrindavan and Mayapur. The word Dvijottama indicates the Brahmanas. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas are all Dvija, or initiated in the Gayatri Mantra. But the Brahmana is Dvijottama, or the highest among those who have received second birth by spiritual initiation. It is recommended that a purified Brahmana take to the renounced order of life, sannyasa, giving up further contact with his so-called wife. The Brahmana is specifically mentioned here, since Kshatriyas and Vaishyas are not to take to the renounced order of life. Even so, there are many stories in the Bhagavatam wherein great kings retire with their aristocratic wives to the forest to practice the austerities of Vanaprastha and thus accelerate the process of purification. The Brahmanas, however, may directly accept the renounced order of life. The words ashramad ashramam gachet indicate that one may progressively move from brahmachari life to grahastha life to vanaprastha life and then to sannyas. The words ashramad ashramam emphasize that one should never remain without an authorized social status, nor should one go backward, falling down from a higher position. Those who are not surrendered devotees of the Lord must rigidly observe such injunctions, for otherwise they will quickly become degraded and their sins will place them outside the bounds of authorized human civilization. Lord Krishna emphasizes here that a non-devotee must rigidly observe the rituals and regulations of Vedic social divisions, whereas the Lord's pure devotee, engaged 24 hours a day in Lord Krishna's mission, is transcendental to such divisions. If, however, one performs illicit activities on the strength of being transcendental to Vedic social divisions, one is revealed to be a materialistic neophyte and not an advanced devotee of the Lord. An advanced devotee who remains aloof from material sense gratification is not bound by the Vedic social divisions. Thus, even a householder may live very, very austerely, traveling and preaching Krishna consciousness away from home. And even a sannyasi may sometimes engage women in the devotional service of Lord Krishna. The most advanced devotees cannot be restricted by the rituals and regulations of the Varnashrama system, and they move freely around the world distributing love of Godhead. Matpara indicates a pure devotee of the Lord who always keeps the Lord fixed in his heart and consciousness. One who falls down to become a victim of sense gratification is not fully established on the platform of Matpara and should rigidly observe the social divisions and regulations to remain steady on the platform of pious human life. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitem Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangulangayate Virim Yatripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So today we are discussing from Canto 11, Chapter 17. Chapter 17 is entitled Lord Krishna's Description of the Varnashrama System. In this chapter, Krishna is explaining to Uddhava how the Varnashrama system evolved over the various yugas and the duties and occupations of each Varna and Ashrama, which appeared subsequently. In the last few verses especially, we see a common thread in Krishna's teachings, which is the consciousness of a person doing his prescribed duty in the Varna or the Ashrama. He is stressing specially in the last few verses about the service attitude of a person, no matter which Varna or which Ashrama he belongs to. Like it was said in the purport also, that he is emphasizing the service attitude, or he is emphasizing proper consciousness, and such devotees of the Lord who are Matpara, who are pure devotees, are not bound by any Varna or Ashrama. As Bhaktivinod Thakur also says, Grahe Thako, Vane Thako, Sada Hari Bole Dako, Shukke Duke Bhulo Nako, Vadane Hari Naam Bolore. What does this mean? It means that whether we are of Grahastha or whether we are of Vanaprastha, please chant the name of Krishna. It doesn't matter which Ashrama or which Varna we belong to. So Krishna is stressing the importance of staying under the shelter or the ashrama of a guru, and he is talking about how one should take permission of the guru when he leaves the ashram and then take the ashram which suits him depending on the instructions of the guru. So we see that, you know, a lot of stress is there on proper training of a person so that his consciousness becomes like a Madhvara devotee. But nowadays, we see that there are so many modern gurus. They don't stress that, you know, come and stay in the ashram like Krishna is stressing over here and take instructions from the guru or, you know, get training from a guru so that you can progress spiritually. We see that people, the so-called modern gurus, they are teaching in fact how not to accept a guru and how you should be on your own and discover your own path, they say. In fact, there was one such Indian guru. He was, you know, he was settled in America for a long time. So he was actually an American of Indian origin. And he had become a guru in America. And somebody asked him that, what is the meaning of this word guru? And he says, guru? Oh, it means G, you are you. So G is the way Americans address each other. So he said, it's G, you are you. So you are saying that just be yourself, discover your own self, follow your own path. There is no need to take shelter of anybody or there is no need for any proper training. In fact, but it is said that one who has his own mind as his teacher has a fool for a student. So it's not good to depend on our own mind like these modern so-called gurus say. That depend on your own mind, follow your own path. But that is not what is being recommended by Krishna over here. So today we will spend some time in discussing that why Krishna is stressing so much on this training the consciousness and training the mind, like he says here, that they should not be on the path of sense gratification, but rather the Madhvara devotees should be free from sense gratification. So we will spend some time discussing that why it is important to train the mind and the consciousness in a proper way, so that it is not engaged in sense gratification, but it is engaged in serving the Lord. So Arjuna also asked a similar question to Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He said that why is it that a person, even though he knows the philosophy or even though he has the right knowledge, why is it that he is propelled to do so much of sinful activities as if by force? And he knows that it is wrong what he is doing and he is getting caught up in the cycle, but still he is not able to give up those sinful activities and he keeps on performing them again and again. So Lord Krishna replies to this. He says, Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajoguna Samudbhavaha. He says, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is the all-devouring, sinful and enemy of a man. What does lust mean? It means the desire to enjoy. And it, you know, we see that all living entities nowadays in the material world have this propensity to enjoy. How much maximum can I gratify my senses? They want to keep enjoying their senses and keep feeding their senses more and more sense gratification. And in this way, this propensity to serve is being used wrongly. So because the enjoying propensity is being used wrongly, we see that it becomes, you know, instead of in the Brahma Samhita, as it says, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena, that one's eyes should be anointed with the love and devotion, but it becomes kamanjana churita bhukti vilochanena. Person's eyes are anointed with kama or lust and they want bhukti, they want to serve bhukti, they want as much bhukti as possible. So instead of using our senses in Krishna's service, one starts using his senses only to gratify his own false ego. So Krishna explains the analogy of, you know, in the subsequent verse, he also explains the analogy of fuel and fire. He tells Arjuna that, you know, the living entities are all engaged in gratifying their senses. And they feel that if I gratify more and more and more, my senses will become satisfied one day. But he said, no, this sense enjoyment is like adding, it's not like water, adding water to the fire. It's like adding actually fuel or petrol to the fire. The more we try to satisfy our senses and the more we do sense gratification, the more and more and more the mind will hanker. So then he asks, Krishna also explains, like Arjuna asks, where is this lust located? And you know, Krishna, he asks that how I can fight this lust. Now, in order to fight an enemy, obviously, we should know where the enemy is first of all located. Otherwise, how can you fight this enemy? And Krishna explains that Indriyani Mano Buddhir, this lust is senses, mind and intelligence are the sitting places for lust. So senses, when they are influenced by lust, they get attracted to pleasure and they start repelling pain. That is the way lust works with the senses. So when the senses see sense objects, what do? They send the image to the mind and they tell the mind that, oh, this is a beautiful sense object, it is meant for my enjoyment. So you keep it stored in the mind, you keep the image stored in the mind, and maybe we can use it later or maybe we can use it now. So the senses is always sending images to the mind. When it sees sense objects, it's always sending images to the mind. So the function of the senses is to send images, like see a sense object and send image to the mind. And then the mind interprets whether it is desirable or undesirable sense object. So mind is like the storehouse. Whatever images the senses are sending, the mind is storing it in the storehouse. And it segregates what object is needed now for my enjoyment. Okay, this I can use in the future for my enjoyment. So it's a repository of all sensual impressions. And this way the mind becomes occupied by lust. And then, how does the mind operate? Like, it keeps, segregating, discriminating. Okay, this is not required, this is required, I can use this, I don't like this. So it's a repository. And next comes the intelligence. The intelligence, when it is contaminated like this, then it keeps, working to satisfy the lusty desires of the mind. Because it has got obsessed with lust, it plans, keeps planning how I can fulfill the desires of the mind. And then it sees, okay, yeah, this sense object, let me use it in the service of the mind. Let me use it so that the sense gratification happens. So what happens is, when the intelligence works like this, it reinforces the false ego of a person. And the person starts thinking that I am the enjoyer and I am the controller. And how all these things in the material world are just meant for my enjoyment. So, the analogy of camera can be used over here. A camera is like the senses. It captures the images. When it sees a sense object, it captures the image and then it stores it on the film. So the film is compared to the mind. It stores it on the film and it stays there. And then when the film, we need to develop the film to get the actual picture, we have to take it to a dark room. So the dark room, like, that is the intelligence, when you take it to the dark room. And when it processes that images in the dark room, then, various pictures come out. But if the same picture is exposed to sunlight, then what will happen? All those, bad images or all those impressions will be wiped out. So same way, the intelligence, mind and senses are working. The camera takes the impressions and sends it to the film. The mind, stores it on the, like, that is the film. And then the intelligence processes it. So, instead of exposing it in the darkness, if it is exposed in light, like, we say Maya is Andhakar and Krishna is Surya Saman. So if it is exposed in the light of Krishna consciousness, then these images won't get converted into sense gratification. So the sense object is external and the mind is internal. And it always depends on how the mind will interpret these signals. Whether it is meant for my enjoyment or whether it is meant for serving or whether it is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. So till the time a living entity has this aham and mameti principle that everything is meant for my enjoyment, everything is mine, till that time his mind will keep interpreting whatever sense objects the senses have seen. That yes, use it in your service, use it in your service, use it for sense gratification. And that leads to karma bandhanaha. But if the same thing is used in Krishna's service, then it will lead to moksha. It is said that mana eva manushyanam karana bandha mokshaya. It is the mind only which is either, making the person bound to the material world, or it is making the person liberated from the material world. The way the mind interprets all these sense objects. So sense objects are neutral, but the way the mind interprets them determines the future. So if done in the proper way and if it is used in Krishna's service, then that is how one can become free from this cycle of sinning. And that is what Arjuna is asking, that why people are propelled and they keep doing these sinful activities again and again. So once one understands that everything has to be used in Krishna's service and it is not for aham and mameti, it is not for my sense enjoyment, then one will be free from this vicious cycle of sinning. And therefore, we see that training the mind is extremely important. Instead of training it to, interpret sense objects for my pleasure, it is very important that the mind is trained that no, these sense objects are meant for Krishna's pleasure. And we see even in the material world, in the so-called karmi world, there is so much stress given to training. Even in corporate world, we see that, you know, so much training. There is a special training department which trains people on various skill sets. Or even in cooking, or whether it's in colleges, unis, everywhere training is required. So similarly, in spiritual life also training is required. So training, what happens by training is, training leads to the transformation of heart, mind and intelligence. Otherwise, always the mind will think, how I can enjoy. And the topmost enjoyment in this material world is sexual enjoyment. That is called as the epitome of sense enjoyment, and which, you know, firmly establishes within a living entity how he is the ultimate proprietor and ultimate enjoyer and ultimate controller, this sexual desire. But it is not possible when, you know, we say train the mind, but when we are walking, for example, when we are walking outside, it is not possible to keep our senses closed or to keep our senses shut. The senses are going to always observe sense objects. Like, for example, if I'm walking down Swanston Street, my eyes are going to see what is, you know, the beautiful, people walking around, or how people are enjoying, or some beautiful clothes hanging in shops. Or my ears are going to be tuned to, you know, the sound vibrations which are coming. There is so much loud music playing in Swanston Street. So my mind, my ears are going to absorb all that, or my eyes are going to absorb all these beautiful images. So it's natural that the senses get attracted to them. But to live in the material world, obviously this bombardment of senses is always going to be there. But instead of, you know, the crux of the matter is that how I can change, you know, the senses, the sense objects which are coming in, the senses which are absorbing all these images. The crux of the matter is how to train the mind not to interpret these sense objects for my sense enjoyment, but how they can be used in Krishna's service. So if the mind is trained properly, it is in a safe condition. Then it will not be, you know, involved in this vicious cycle of sinning and vicious cycle of keeping on doing sinful acts and keeping on enjoying again and again. And it will be free from this vicious circle. And in this regard, I was watching a skit, like it's there on the internet, and it's called Me and My Mind. I think some devotees had performed it in one of the retreats as well. And in that, there are three characters. It's a silent, there's no dialogues in that movie. So there's a character called Me, and there's a character called Mind, and there's another character called Kali. And in that, we see that how the, you know, mind is, you know, keeping on troubling that Me. When Kali comes and, you know, shows a picture of a movie, then immediately the mind starts troubling Me. That, oh, let's go for the movie. Then Kali comes with a bottle of wine. Immediately the mind starts troubling Me. That, oh, let's go and have this wine. Or let's go and smoke. So, you know, continuously the mind was getting these sense objects. It was, you know, seeing all these beautiful images. And continuously it was troubling Me. No, you take me here, you take me there. I want to enjoy. And then came along the devotees, and, you know, a little bit of preaching happened, and that Me started chanting. And again still the mind was, you know, troubling, that, you know, I want to go for sense enjoyment. But because Me had been trained to chant, and Me had been trained to do Krishna consciousness, then it gives a tight slap to the mind, and it tells him that, no, you also chant, and we have to reject all these sensual enjoyments. So from Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is the example of Ramanand Rai. And once Pradyumna Mishra, he was a Brahmin, he goes to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he asks him that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I want to hear about Krishna Katha. So can you please tell me something about the glories of the Lord? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy whenever any devotee used to come to him to hear about Krishna Katha. And he appreciates. He says that your eagerness to hear Krishna Katha is really good. Because whatever duties or whatever dharma you may perform, but if it doesn't lead to this eagerness to hear Krishna Katha, then it is all useless waste of time. Like it is said in the Bhagavatam, dharmasva anushthita pumsam vikshvak visvaksena katha suya na utpade yadi ratim shrama eva hi kevalam. Shrama eva hi kevalam means it is a useless waste of time if it doesn't, you know, generate this affinity to hearing the messages of the Lord. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy. And he says that it is useless to follow all duties or any, you know, varna or ashrama duties if it is not leading to Krishna consciousness. So So he tells him that, you know, you please go to Ramanand Rai. I also hear about Krishna Katha from Ramanand Rai. He is very, very qualified to tell you about the glories of the Lord. And in this way, Pradyumna Mishra goes to the house of Ramanand Rai. And he is received very nicely by the servants of Ramanand Rai, and they, you know, offer him nice seat and they do very good hospitality with him. And then he asks, where is Ramanand Rai? And they say that Ramanand Rai has right now gone out because he is training two young girls to perform a drama. So he has taken them to a secluded place and he is training them on a drama which he himself has written. And the name of that drama was Jagannath Vallabha Nataka. And this drama was actually depicting the gopis' feelings of, their feelings of love or their bhava or expressions towards Lord Krishna. And the servants were explaining that how Ramanand Rai has taken them and he himself is personally training them how to bring out those expressions of the gopis. But Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains that, you know, even though Ramanand Rai was in a secluded place with the gopi, with these two girls, his mind or his body were not at all affected, even though they were in the presence of these beautiful sense objects. He had ultimately, absolutely no desire for sense gratification. And it was as if he was just touching wood or stone. There was no effect at all on Ramanand Rai. In fact, what was Ramanand Rai's thinking at that time when he was training the gopis? His thinking was that these girls are gopis. And, you know, they have so much love for Krishna. And it is my duty to serve them. I am just their maid servant. This was the whole consciousness of Ramanand Rai. So when he comes back, Ramanand Rai comes back, it was quite late, so Pradyumna Mishra doesn't discuss any Krishna Katha with him, but he goes to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he wanted to clarify that what I heard Ramanand Rai was doing. So he asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that, you know, the servants told me that like this Ramanand Rai has taken two girls in a secluded place and he's training them on how to do this natak or how to do this drama. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so happy. He says that I am a sannyasi. So even if I hear the name of a woman or the word woman, I start getting changes in my body and in my mind. But Ramanand Rai, he is on a different position. He is totally on a spiritual platform. He doesn't have a material body. He has a spiritual body. So his mind and his body and his senses are like stone. They are as steady as a stone. They don't get affected in the presence of these beautiful sense objects. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu further explains. He says that I have a clue why Ramanand Rai is in this position. How he is able to control his senses and his mind. So he says that he has attained this position because as it is said in the Bhagavatam, Shrinvatam Swakatham Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridayantasti Abhadrani Vidunoti Suhrat Satam. And the next verse says, Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavatir Neshtiti. So when a person has Shrinvatam Swakatha Krishna, when a person has gained affinity or developed an attraction to hear the messages of Krishna, then whatever is Hrida Antastohi Abhadrani, whatever is Abhadra, whatever is inauspicious in the heart, all material desires go away from that person's heart if he has developed an affinity to hear the messages of Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that that is the case of Ramanand Rai. He has developed so much attraction for Krishna Katha that there is absolutely no desire for sense enjoyment or gratification in his heart. And that is why today he is in this position, that he is able to totally detach himself even though he is in the presence of sense objects. So he says that you also go to him now and you go and hear Krishna Katha from him. And Pradyumna Mishra comes back to Ramanand Rai and he says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has instructed me to hear Krishna Katha from you. Can you please tell me something about the glories of the Lord? And Ramanand Rai was such a humble person. He says that no, actually I am not qualified to speak anything about Krishna. It is Krishna only who uses me as an instrument to glorify himself. He says that I am just a musical instrument, like a tambura. So when a musician takes a musical instrument, whatever the musician will do with the instrument, that is what the instrument will vibrate or that is what the instrument will play. So similarly, I am also just an instrument in Krishna's hand and the way he makes me vibrate my tongue, that is the way I speak. And then they have discussion about Krishna Katha. So the point is, like the moral which we get from this, is that if the mind is trained properly, to serve Krishna rather than gratifying our own senses, then the mind will be steady like Ramanand Rai's mind. In fact, in Hitopadesh, there is a book called Hitopadesh in which Narayan Pandit says that when you are enjoying sense gratification, you enjoy it as if today is the last moment of your life. So if, for example, if we give someone, you know, a big plate of pasta, pizza, samosas, rasgullas, and we tell them that you can enjoy all this, but as soon as you finish enjoying this, you are going to die. So obviously that person is going to say, no, I'm not going to eat this only. So he says that enjoy sense gratification as if it's the last moment of your life. But when it comes to training or hearing or learning, then keep learning as if you are eternal. Don't think that, you know, today I will learn, but what is going to be the use of this? Or I will train my mind, but, you know, it's all going to end. No, you learn and you train yourself as if you are eternal. It will be used sometime. So even Srila Prabhupada was asked many times that I am being troubled by, you know, lust like this. In fact, there was a reporter who asked Srila Prabhupada that, are you a self-realized person? And Srila Prabhupada says, yes, I am a self-realized person. Lust doesn't affect me. So the reporter asks him, how is it that you are a self-realized person? And Prabhupada says that, to, you know, in this room, if this room is full of naked women, still it will not affect me. I will be still steady. It will not affect my senses. Neither will I get attracted to these naked women. But if you are in this room, you will definitely fall down. You will get attracted to them. So whenever disciples used to ask Prabhupada that I am always being bombarded by this lust, what do I do about this lust? Srila Prabhupada used to reply to them that constant chanting of the holy names of the Lord is the only remedy to counteract this lust. And what is this chanting? Like, what does it mean when we are chanting? It means that we are begging to Radha and Krishna that please enjoy me, please engage me in your service, O Lord. And I want to serve you eternally. And what does lust mean? Lust means I want to enjoy eternally. So it is all about how we transform the mind from enjoying propensity to serving propensity. And then only it is possible to counteract this lust. Now it is difficult to counteract lust on our own efforts. And it, you know, a proper understanding of material existence and spiritual existence is required for a person who wants to, like especially for devotees, when we want to counteract lust. And same, you know, we again refer to the Ramanand Rai. He used to have so many discussions with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to ask him that, Ramanand Rai, what is the best education? He used to ask him, what is the best education? And Ramanand Rai used to say that the best education is spiritual education. In fact, Srila Prabhupada used to say that, you know, nowadays there are so many institutions. Always Prabhupada used to put up this point whenever any, you know, big philosophers, so-called philosophers or educationists used to come to him, that there are so many universities and all of them are just teaching about the body. In fact, since childhood, a child is trained to, you know, train that you are the body, you are not the soul, and how you should look after your body nicely, how you should study well so that you get a good job, and then when you get a good job, you will get a good pay, and when you get good money, then how you can live comfortably and how you can nicely enjoy your senses. So since childhood, this training is given, not only in schools and colleges, even when we see newspapers or we see media or we see all these big advertisements, everything is continuously bombarding how to enjoy your senses nicely, how to gratify your senses and how to live comfortably in this material world. So Prabhupada always used to say that there is no institution which is teaching about the spirit soul. And so that is why Ramanand Rai said that the best education is education about the devotional service of the Lord. And then like this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asks lot of questions that who is the most glorious person? And Ramanand Rai said that it is the devotee of the Lord who is most glorious. And which is the best form of meditation? And he says that it is meditation on Krishna, which is the best. And he says, who is the most wealthy? And Ramanand Rai says that today in the material world, a person who has lot of money is considered to be the most wealthy. In fact, you know, we see how Bill Gates or, you know, any rich person, if they come, how they are, there's so much importance is given to them and how they are so much respected. But Ramanand Rai says that the best wealth a person has is to have love of Radha and Krishna in their heart. So like this, they have lot of discussion about what is the best devotee, what is the best education, what is the best wealth, and what is the greatest distress, which is not having association of the devotees of the Lord. So from this dialogue, you know, Ramanand Rai is establishing how, you know, a devotee should have proper understanding of the material existence and how everything has to be used in Krishna's service, whether it is education or whether it is meditation, whether it is association, whether it is wealth. Everything has to be dovetailed with Krishna consciousness. And this knowledge is available only from the scriptures. So very important that we read scriptures and we get this proper training for our mind. And next is, how do we serve? Like, how do we, what is the proper attitude when we are serving? We see that so many times people do service, but it is mainly out of compulsion, like they are being forced to do the service, or it is out of some self-proclamation. They want some, you know, we see people doing so many voluntary services outside, like philanthropic works, but they all want, you know, some glory or some recognition out of it. So what should be the proper attitude for serving? And it is said that the proper attitude for serving should be that we put the concern of others before our own concern. And we work for their benefit. We don't put our benefit in front of, you know, others, this thing. And the example of Jayanand Prabhu comes to our mind when we talk about so much, you know, service attitude. Jayanand Prabhu was an epitome of service in ISKCON, in our temple. He used to, but somebody asked Jayanand Prabhu that, how is it that you are always so happy, you are always so blissful? And Jayanand Prabhu replies that, I actually don't endeavor to become happy. My only efforts and my only endeavor is to see that how others are happy. And I always work to see that whether they are comfortable, whether, you know, they are doing their Krishna consciousness well. And this is how I become happy. So service attitude means you worry about others' happiness and automatically happiness will come to you. It is going to come to you. If we are in the mode of always receiving service, receiving service, receiving service, that is, you know, then we are in big trouble. Because then we will be caught up in that cycle of how everybody should serve me, how everything is meant for my service. But instead of that, if we develop the mood like Jayanand Prabhu, that how I have to serve and how I have to give happiness to others, then we'll be free from this vicious cycle. And we even see Srila Prabhupada's own example, that even at the age of 70, he was so concerned about other people's Krishna consciousness that he went by ship and he came to America and he, you know, spread Krishna consciousness just out of this concern that others should be happy and others should go back to Godhead. So that is the proper mood when we have to serve. You know, in India sometimes when we talk about service, people feel that, oh, service, no, it is meant for lowly people. And especially, like, not in the West so much, but in India we have this concept called peons and clerks and all that. So what? You're talking about service? It's, you know, these peons and clerks are meant to do service. I am not such a lowly person. I am, you know, in quite a top position. So everybody is meant to serve me. So it is very difficult to train the mind to, you know, get away from this enjoyment propensity and to go back into the service propensity and to become a servant. And therefore it is, in fact Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that in order to become the servant, you have to give up all your designations. He says that naham vipro, naham shudro, naham vaishyo. He says neither I am a shudra, nor I am a vaishya, nor I am a kshatriya, nor I am a brahmana. I am simply the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord of the gopis. And that is the mood which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asks people to develop, that, you know, this service attitude will come only when you train yourself and when you give up this propensity to sense enjoyment. In fact, there was one more example of Jayanand Prabhu during his last moments of his life when he was in the hospital. And this was observed by the doctors when some devotees were, you know, compiling a book on Jayanand Prabhu. They went and asked the doctors who were, you know, serving in the hospital. And they said that usually when patients come in a hospital, they always are in that mood of how I should receive service, how the doctors and nurses should serve me properly, or how relatives should come and serve me. So they are always in that mood of receiving, receiving, receiving. And if some service is not done properly, then they get irritated that why you are not serving me properly, why you didn't come and check my temperature, or why I was not given medicines on time, or why my food was not served on time. But the doctor said that Jayanand Prabhu was totally not in this mood. Even when he was on deathbed and Jayanand Prabhu had cancer, it was a very painful situation during the last moments of his life. So even though he was on deathbed, his only concern was, are the devotees happy? Are they performing their service nicely? And he was, you know, from the hospital, he used to coordinate the Rath Yatra because he was in charge of the Rath Yatra in San Francisco. So he used to sit and coordinate that, you know, okay, is the service of Lord Jagannath going on nicely? So never, he was not in the mood of receiving at all, even at the last moments of his life. His only concern was to see that devotees are happy, and if they are, you know, benefiting from their Krishna consciousness, and if they are being, you know, looked after nicely in the temple, even though he is not present. So to summarize, all living entities are addicted to sense enjoyment and to sense gratification. And it is lust, because of lust, that, you know, these sense enjoyment propensity comes up. And how it is so important to train our mind not to have sense enjoyment, but how to dovetail that propensity of enjoying, you know, to instead of enjoying our own senses, to give pleasure to Krishna's senses. And training the mind to accept the position of a servant, although it's extremely difficult to train the mind to accept the position of servant, but it is possible if one places oneself in the ashrama of a guru, then the guru will train the person, a person's mind, in how not to, you know, do sense gratification, but how to work for the pleasure of Krishna. And that is why we see in these verses, Krishna is always stressing that, you know, a person should live in the ashrama of a guru, and how the brahmachari should serve the guru. And when, you know, the brahmachari serves nicely the guru, then the guru gives instructions to that person on how to, you know, dovetail his whole consciousness to Krishna consciousness. And therefore we see that Srila Prabhupada, he has also set up this nice institution, ISKCON, where so much, Prabhupada used to emphasize so much on training, because he said that only by training is the transformation of heart and mind going to happen. Otherwise the mind of all living entities always wants to enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. But Prabhupada set up this institution so that we have regular Bhagavatam classes, we have services, we have deity worship, we have other kitchen services. So the mind and the body becomes trained in serving, serving, serving. And in this way, by dovetailing the propensity, the person, the living entity, can come out of this vicious circle of sense enjoyment and doing sinful activities, and instead of that, serving Krishna always. Thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Not doing any comments.